Joining us now, making his weekly appearance on the program, albeit a couple of days early, two days and a half hour early to be precise, is State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, how are you this morning?
I am doing great. I like that you look at it as early. I look at it as late because we didn't get to talk last week. I apologize.
Well, it was Christmas Day. as much as I would love to have you on, and many of our listeners out there love to hear from you, Christmas Day, unwrapping presents and stuff of that nature, you know how it is.
I do indeed, and I concur. So good to talk to you, though.
Yeah, so I guess a little bit's changed since the last time we talked, though. It still looks like February 2nd is on to do something. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, on the program a little bit earlier, very, very skeptical that you're going to get much done from February 2nd until whenever the vaccine starts working. It's magic. What are you hearing from your colleagues, from leadership? What is the outlook for the legislative session?
First, Todd usually has his ear on the track pretty darn good, but I'll also tell you that he's also a skeptic. I mean, that's typically what he does. But I will tell you that I think, at least from the Senate standpoint and the conversations I've had, we are going to be in the State House, going to work, getting it done. I just hope that the House is able to figure out a way to work. We've had plenty of time to look at this. We've had plenty of time to figure out a method to deal with it. The vaccine is coming for some of those that are at risk. There's still time for them to get both doses of that. They were at the greatest risk, and it is time to go back to work. You and I have talked about this before. We've asked everybody else to go back to work. I don't know how in the world the Alabama legislature can tell the people of the state of Alabama, well, it's safe for you, but it's just not safe for us. I mean, it's time to go, and I for one am ready.
It's really remarkable that that is the consideration. Seems to be, it's either it's safe or it's not. There doesn't, what seems like to me, there doesn't seem to be any willingness to even explore. Maybe I'm just not I'm not privy to these discussions. But if you can't do it at that Union Street facility, meet somewhere else, meet at the Renaissance Hotel, find you a big open space to get something done to make it look like you're working. But there's reluctance. Am I wrong?
I don't understand what the reluctance there is. I mean, there is a fair amount of back office operations that happen, enrolling and grossing of bills. I mean, you've been around, you know how all the back office stuff works. It could be challenging there, but I think the House really needs to figure out a way to get, enough members back to conduct business. I mean, my constituents are clamoring for it. In my conversations with my colleagues and some members of leadership, they're saying we're going back in. I am ready to go back in, and I will be in the State House on February 2nd. I think the Senate needs to lead on this and show that we are back in and going and frankly, kind of put some pressure on our House colleagues to get back in and to do the thing.
Well, is there, this just seems to be me just looking at this, and forgive me if it seems a little too conspiratorial or whatever you want to call it, but there seems to be a lot of people in Montgomery would just assume you guys not meet at all. So be there, and it's not an ideological thing, that they have big plans and don't need the Alabama legislature meddling in their plans. So therefore, let's discourage any kind of any long prolonged meeting of the Alabama legislature.
Well, the joke back when I was on the county commission was, what the legislature, we used to talk to our legislators and they'd ask, what can we do for you? And my answer was always, go home. I just don't do anything that changes anything or causes us any problems. And listen, I know that a lot of times, our role in the legislature, frankly, is to keep things from happening. But what I think the public is seeing and others are seeing, even on the local government level, is that maybe that's not the right attitude to have, because things are continuing to happen just without the people's representatives there. And I think your point is well taken. You know, government is continuing to function. It's just functioning without the natural checks and balances that are called for in the Constitution. The people's representatives are not there in order to check the power of the executive, for instance, and that's a problem. We are not there to pass some much-needed legislation, and that's a problem. And I think that the general public is starting to say, hey, you know, these guys do serve a purpose. Maybe it's a limited one, and maybe it's not as expanded as they like to think it is, but we do need them back, if for no other reason than to make sure that there is a check to the governing that is happening right now without the voice of the people.
I mean, that's the point I'm struggling to get conveyed here, without, you know, being sounding like some kind of sycophant for the Alabama legislature here, but that there is this the balance of powers out of whack without the legislature there, that you're enabling the governor. And it's not just this last executive order with the economic incentives and the taxation, but it's more than that. It's the prison issue. There's work being done on gaming, that you have this void without the Alabama legislature in the game at all. Everyone's kind of scattered in all 67 counties. And that if you're really a constitutional conservative in the sense that you believe in, you know, checks and balances, you gotta have some skin in the game here, and you don't.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I'll say if you're the Alabama legislature sycophant, you're the only one I know of, because there's not very many of them running around. But you're absolutely right in saying that, and it's not about my voice or another legislator's voice being heard. It is that we are representing the people's voice. And that is our job as representatives and senators, is to make sure that we provide that check and balance to the Montgomery insiders, to the executive, that just by function of the fact that there's just one governor, if you will, that can't be everywhere, that can't hear the voices of the people. That's our job as representatives. To do that and to provide that voice, to amplify that voice, to check and balance what the executive's doing. And well, unfortunately, that's been muted here recently, and it needs to change.
Well, you know, you think about something that directly impacts your life, having to wear the mask, whether you agree with it or not, the shutdowns, all the stuff pertaining to COVID-19 mitigation, everything that's being done in that sense, that is a profound impact on your life. You may agree with it, you may disagree with it, you may think needs to be done, but the best way to really get to the bottom of it has to be through the legislative process, I would think.
I would certainly think so as well, and you correctly point out again that all of the COVID actions, but all of the COVID money that's been appropriated as well, has, by and large, and in all practical purposes, been appropriated by the executive. And those are opportunities for the people's representative to insert their voice, their opinion in the process. And again, those have largely been muted, and I think to our democratic form of government's detriment, it would have been much better to have the people's representatives engaged in those conversations, representing the interests of small businesses, representing the interests of folks that are unemployed, as opposed to one single executive making all those decisions.
How has that gone? We have talked about the CARES Act money, and tomorrow would have been the deadline, or it's not clear to me. But as far as appropriating that money, spending it, what's your sense of the way that's been handled by the executive branch?
I think that the executive has taken that money and tried to get rid of it as quickly as possible. I don't think it's necessarily in the most efficient manner, certainly, and I don't know that, given the fact that this has now been extended, that it's been the best way to spend it. But at the same time, they seem to have spent the lion's share of it by the end of the year. Now the question comes: how much is left over? and do we take advantage, you know, of the extension provided by this new piece of federal legislation that will extend the opportunity to keep extending this for COVID relief. I continue to object to the manner in which it was appropriated, and I'll, you know, use that in quotation marks, by the Alabama legislature. I am not aware of a governing body that has ever appropriated a sum of money that large without a specific budgeted purpose. I mean, we put it in giant buckets just because, and ran it through, and then allowed a very key group of individuals to kind of recalculate it as they went. I understand the practicality of that approach, but gosh, Jeff, at some point we've got to stop using, well, it's a pandemic, and well, that's the only way we can do it. And we threw all of our principles out of the window in order to just get through it, because those chickens are going to come home to roost one day. We continue to appropriate money without any specific budgeted purpose. That's going to cause problems in the budgeting process later on. We continue to allow widespread executive power, either from unelected bureaucrats in the state health officer or in a governor. Those are chickens that are going to come home to roost one day, and they're not good for the constitutional provisions and concerns about checks and balances, but overall they're not good for the people who need to still have their voice heard in Montgomery.
Well, let me run this question by you. Let's say the circumstances had lent themselves to Alabama legislature could have met. They could have divvied up the money the old-fashioned way, with the power to purse strings being in the legislative branch. Was it logistically possible to spend that without just kind of having the executive just kind of making all the calls?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I think that it certainly would have been. I mean, let's be honest, the Alabama legislature does not have a problem generally spending money. That's something that we're pretty darn adept at. As a matter of fact, that's our only job, is to appropriate money. That is our main job, is to pass the budgets and appropriate money. So I would hazard a guess that we're pretty good at that. I will say that I think having, you know, 35 senators and 105 representatives vetting different programs and their staffs, frankly, vetting different ideas on ways to get this CARES Act money may have been a better way to filter through these ideas than simply having all of that residing with finance director. I think we probably could have done it a whole lot better, and certainly one that was that had some more fidelity to the Constitution and separation of powers than what actually occurred.
Well, I just you know, it's not just the executive order, but it all started with that vote. I guess you were the lone no vote in the Senate at the time. But by ceding that process to the executive,
it was a concern of mine at the time. Again, more for the constitutional issues than anything else. And we've just seen that happen over and over again. They're little infractions. They're infractions that everybody kind of says okay to, but you got to wonder, at what point do these little infractions really become bigger issues constitutionally? You know, you pointed out before in some of your writings that, you know, not since George Wallace have we seen this type of, you know, exercising of executive authority. And again, this isn't, you know, about my power versus their power. It's not about that. It's about the people's voice and whether or not unelected bureaucrats and the state health officer, for instance, should have that wide, broad power to affect our economy with no check and balance, or whether or not the governor should have broad powers to issue executive orders that purport to have something to do with a pandemic that really don't pass the constitutional smell test when you look at them, but that we all say, well, it's something we would have done anyway, so it's okay. Those are constitutional concerns that may seem esoteric, but I think are very relevant in the conversations we're going to have when we get back into session.
Senator, we're out of time. We got to get out of here. But as always, thanks for making time for us.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
That was State Senator Chris Elliott making his weekly visit here on the program.